Welcome to We're Reading Dirty Books. This is Saylet.
And this is Kalina.
You were about to take a sip of water.
I know. I realized it as you were talking. I was like, oh, don't drink now. You got to say words soon.
You do. But that's okay. You can go ahead and do that. I'll keep introducing ourselves. We are a podcast who reads romance novels. Oh, that's going to have to get some getting used to now.
Yeah, we do.
So not just paranormal. All sorts of different things we are going to be introducing. This is going to be a good one of new genres that we're going to be getting into. But thank you for joining us.
If we like it, yeah.
That's true. If we like it. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Okay. I have a quickie for you.
Okay.
You're going to a fancy ball at a duke's residence, a fancy ducal ball back in the 1800s.
Ducal ball.
What color is your dress? And it can't be black because they only wore black for mourning back then. So
can't be black. Okay. You know, God, I have no idea. My first initial thought was gold, like a champagne, you know, like a champagne, maybe a rose gold. And then I think maybe also like a yellow gold. So somewhere along that wavelength of gold.
Okay.
Of those different colors, I think would probably work. I don't know. I like the gold. I like the orange-ish type of things. I'm actually going sort of back to like Bridgerton and things like that. And I'm thinking of season two.
Penelope.
Penelope wears a lot of yellow. Like
that's all her
season.
That's all her mom puts her in. It was yellow. And it's like the worst color on her.
And well, she hates it, but I think she looks really cute.
Yeah. But in the book, is supposed to be actually like a bad color on her. It's supposed to
a really gross.
Yeah,
gross
it's supposed yellow. To not be her color. And then she shows like up flattering. At a party in a not that color one day, and everyone's like, "Oh my god, you look so much better." And she's like, "Yeah, fucking mom won't dress us out of orange.
I'm not gonna wear yellow anymore." But even Kate, who has a darker skin, wore like pastel purples and stuff, and I think they wore a lot of purple. And it looked really good on her too. And I'm not that dark complected, but I am tan. And I just don't know if I would wear pastel colors that well. But I'm willing to try a dull yellow and see how that looks. Because I like those colors.
Cool.
What about you?
Probably blue. If I can't wear black, I usually wear navy. So I don't know if navy was a color back then.
Right. Yeah, because they all seem like really bright.
Well, everything we see is colors? Modern. Right?
Oh.
Like, it's modern reproductions. So
I guess that's true.
They had color. They definitely had bright colors. They were more limited depending on, because they were still using natural dyes. So they would have had to find things that dyed fabric to those colors. So they're probably not the colors you saw in Bridgerton. I'm just going to say a lot of that, like, peacocky colors that were, especially on the girls in the second season, the girls from India.
Didn't exist.
Probably not as bright as that. But sure, colors, you know, they definitely had colors. The trick is, here's the even bigger trick. Some of the colors that they used were actually poisonous. So like greens were actually arsenic. So ladies who dressed in green a lot got very sick.
Holy shit. Oh my god.
Because they would use these really toxic things to dye for some of the dyes. And it would be fashionable. So you'd pay to wear this fashionable kind of clothing and then like get sick.
And then get sick from it. Oh
so I don't know if they even had navy, but maybe I'm sure they had blues. They definitely had blues of some sort.
Yeah, definitely had blue.
Blue's actually a hard color to a natural hard color to create.
I was going to say, like, where would it come from? That's like a natural.
Because like most of the flowers and stuff that you think of as blue, when you crush them and dye them, they turn purple. They're not blue. So like blue, I think, comes from like lapis lazuli and some other minerals that'll dye, that'll keep stain things blue. I think that's where that comes from. But yeah, like a cerulean or something. I'd wear blue if I could.
Yeah.
Blue is my color. Also, I have to remember that I probably wouldn't have my hair color.
You would be a blonde.
I'd be a weird, nondescript blonde. Because I wouldn't have had the chance to dye my hair the right color.
That's right. Either that or like some type of redhead. That's like if you were to have dyed your hair, like that would probably be the available color.
Mm. So, yeah, I don't know. But my natural inclination, of course, is just to wear black. But I don't think they ever were allowed to wear it outside of mourning. So
yeah, and white's not, that's for weddings still, right?
Well, it wasn't back then, no.
It wasn't back then? Okay.
The white for wedding didn't happen until, well, Victoria did it. And then it kind of became a thing in the, like, 40s or 50s, I want to say. It became a wedding thing because of the wedding industrial complex, not because of, it was not tied to purity, it was not tied to
not
virginism.
Because you're a virgin.
No, it did not mean that shit, not like it does now, not back then. And yeah, wedding dresses were just fancy dresses, they weren't white.
Okay.
I do think Queen Victoria got married in white, and that became kind of a trend. So it might have been, but young debutantes wore white a lot. It was a sign of like that they were new out in society.
Fresh so they, in society.
Yeah. Not, I mean, you want to say virginal, but I don't think so. I think it was just part of, that was what you wore until, because there were strictures on what kind of dress and how your hair was done up until you were married, like whether you were married or not married, you had to do hair a different way. Hmm. There's a lot of dumb shit, but.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Being a woman is very hard.
It's difficult.
But yes, so we would be in our blue and gold.
Blue and we would, yeah, absolutely.
Dresses, which is funny because that was your birthday colors this weekend.
Oh my God, it totally was. And I wore bright gold pants. No, I wouldn't wear that gold. That was ridiculous. I did that just to be ridiculous. And I accomplished that ridiculousness. But at like a Duke's ball or something, it would be more like a champagne, a really, really tame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course, it still has to be shimmery and shiny and stuff.
Oh, so. Well, yeah, that's what they have beads for.
Yes, exactly. I love that shit. Awesome. Well, that's all to say that for this week, we have read Bring Down the Duke by Evie Dunmore, narrated by Elizabeth Jasicki. And my first ever, is this historical?
Yep, historical.
Historical romance. So yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. And our first for the podcast, I think.
It's the first for the podcast. I didn't realize it was your first ever reading. I read a lot of these.
Never done a historical one, ever.
I love them.
Yeah, this one was funny. It was good.
Yeah. Sometimes you just are like, I want to take away all the modern bullshit and just have these two characters fall in love. And obviously they're all set, or not all, but a certain percentage of them are set among like the upper class. So there's a certain, you know, ease to the lifestyle versus any of the actual people who had to work during these years.
Right.
Their life is not like this.
Suffered. Yeah.
But again, this is escapism reading. This is why we read,
exactly.
Not because we want to be sad. So
that's right.
quick overview of the book. We meet
Annabelle.
Thank you. I was like, what the fuck was her name? We meet Annabelle. And Oxford has recently allowed women into the college to study, of course, under very strict rules about how they are there and what they can study and all this. But it is happening. And she's so excited. She really wants to go off and study. She was raised by her father, who was a scholar and a curate, I think, some kind of clergy something. But he has since died. Her mom has died. He's died. So she's living at the grace of her cousin. So she's in his household as a maid, taking care of his so far five and growing family. Because he can't stay off his fucking wife.
Apparently.
And so she's pregnant again. And they have no money because he doesn't understand budgets. But he's in control of her life because he's the male heir,
the male relative
in her line. And so he gets to dictate her life for her. And so she's trying to convince him to go to let her go to college. And he's like, educating women is so stupid. Their brains get all addled and they wander off.
They don't know what to do with knowledge.
They don't understand shit.
Information.
Their brains are crazy. So, you know, she very smartly convinces him by basically bribing him. She's going to pay him for her to go because losing her as a worker in the household means he has to replace her, and he has to replace her by someone he has to pay because he doesn't pay her. But now he's going to have to pay an actual maid to come and help at the household and, you know, help his wife who's pregnant again. And so she agrees to pay him basically, and he lets her go. So she's off in college now. She's on a stipend from the women's suffrage movement. So they are paying for her to go to college. In exchange, she does have to take part in the women's suffrage movement. So she has to go to the Oxford meetings and like do the leafleting and pamphleting that they're, you know, and all the other activities that they're doing. She has to support them. So she's running herself pretty ragged. She's barely eating, not sleeping, because she's tutoring to make money to send back home, because her stipend only covers her going to school and like living expenses, not sending £2 a month home to Gilbert, the cousin. So she's, you know, she's pretty starched, pretty thin, but now she's taking part in all of these things for the movement. And she runs into this guy outside Parliament. And she like walks up and starts trying to tell him about the, you know, the cause. And he obviously is very important. He's special. And he, you know, looks at her and she looks him straight in the eye and talks back to him in ways that he's like, nobody talks to me like this.
No, excuse me.
Anyway, it's a quick meet cute. He moves on. Turns out he's Duke of Montgomery. He's like the Queen's right hand man. He's running the election campaign for the Tories. Which is not the good party, guys. The Tories are the bad ones. And so, you know, all their other suffragists are like, I can't believe you talked to the Duke of Montgomery. He's
straight up went up there. Yeah.
You know, we don't ever talk to him. He's too powerful. And she's like, oh.
She's like, oh, I didn't realize.
Nobody told me, right? So obviously this is who the couple, like, this is the couple of the story. So now it's just about how this two very unlikely pair end up together. Circumstances, she goes to his house for a house party, trying to get information out of his brother. He comes home. He wasn't supposed to be there. He finds her in his house and is like, obviously interprets it wrong, thinks she's trying to like snare his brother into marriage. Yeah. And she's like, I don't even know Peregrine. Oh, whatever. But, you know, she storms out of his house in the snowing, terrible, well, like blizzard. Well, he did kick her out, but he said, you can leave once it's safe to travel. And she said, bitch, I'll travel now.
Oh, I guess that's true. Yeah. I'll go in the snowstorm.
So she's, yeah, she storms out in a snowstorm, walking 7 miles to a village where she might stay at a hotel or an inn. Mm-hmm. And he like has to chase her down on a horse and bring her back to the house. And then she's sick, so she stays at his house because she can't travel. And meanwhile, you know, he has a doctor come see her. And the doctor's like, she's worn to the bone. She's exhausted and starving. She needs to sleep for like 2 weeks and get food. Yeah. And he's like, okay, I can do that. I'm a duke.
So now he thinks she's like neglected and like...
Exactly. So he's feeding her up and he's keeping her safe and, you know, he's very attracted to her. And he does all his background. He finds out what, you know, who she is. She's a blue stocking. That's what women who go to college are called. I don't know. Maybe I should look up the origin of that, because that's a super interesting term that I don't know the origin of. But anyway.
I was interested in that, too, because that automatically reminded me, of course, of blue collar. And so I was just thinking.
Exactly. They might be related in some way.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, you know, she stays through Christmas and she stays, you know, they go to a couple of parties. She's like just his, you know, his guest. Mm-hmm. Nobody's making too big of a deal about it. She stays for the party. He gets talked into having a big New Year's Eve party because
he throws the best parties.
Well, his family used to. He never liked them. But the queen is trying to make him do certain things in order to get his house back, his old ancestral home back.
The castle.
Castle Montgomery, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, you know, they're falling in love. They're definitely like tensions are high. We've got a lot of sparks. We got a lot of like stolen moments together. Like they're looking in each other's eyes. She knows she has a history. She's not an innocent. Right. So it all comes out over the course of the book that she, you know, at 17 was pretty much seduced by a second son of a lord or something. And well, she says she fell in love with him too and, you know, like gave herself to him. But there's definitely a power imbalance in a 17-year-old girl does not know her mind. Sorry. You're 17. But, you know, naturally after a couple of weeks and a fun time, he leaves and doesn't contact her ever again. And she comes out pregnant and she has to tell her father, and her father makes her go and see the guy's father, you know, the lord. Mm-hmm. And he just basically calls her a strumpet and like a gold digger and says, it didn't work. I don't care about you and I don't care about the baby. I'm not interested in that. So she gets sent off to the aunt. The baby doesn't make, you know, she doesn't come full term, you know, miscarries. And so, but she's pretty much like ruined goods in terms of that world. And, you know, she's like, I am not getting married. I'm not dealing with this. I don't trust men. They don't stay. And she's, you know, she's so precariously placed. She was born into a good enough family. They aren't nobility or anything, but, you know, her father was like a third son. So he was a, you know, a curate working in the church, which is where most third sons end up. And so not like not bad off, but just on that edge, right? And the next step for her would be like working.
Yes.
And like serving as a maid or a governess or some kind of laborer in another person's house. And eventually just there's not a good story for her. She doesn't have a good forecast ahead of her. And on top of it, she's super fucking smart.
Yes.
She's already highly educated. Like her father taught her Greek and Latin, which is just wild anyway for her station. And she can read it and she can like do actual thought process, like yeah. has ideas
she
and
knows
thoughts
how to think.
And so she wants to go to school. So she's gone to school. So she's in this tough place where she's smart and she's also very, very beautiful. Like all of the other, you know, women are just like, yeah, you're the most pretty of all of us. So that's why you have to go talk to the Duke.
Yes.
And he sees it and he's intrigued because he has the opposite problem where, you know, he's at this high rank and he's supposed to do these certain things. He did what he was supposed to do. He got married. His wife ran off with her lover because his wife was a, you know, properly bred young lady of the certain class who is taught to just grin and bear life. So she didn't really, it didn't matter whether she wanted to marry him or not because her dad wanted her to marry him. So her dad was like, this is who you're marrying. You're going to marry a duke, which is the highest thing you can marry short of prince and king. It's duke is next. Anyway, so she didn't stay long because she did not love him. And he is not the easiest man, I think, to be around or to love.
I would say.
And he doesn't let himself go very easily. So I'm sure that it wasn't like the greatest relationship. But she runs away after 6 months with her lover. And he finds him and he says, okay, I'll give you a divorce, but you don't come back to England. Like you stay in Italy with your new dude. And so he manages it. It is a bit of a scandal. And everyone expects like he's going to have to marry and have an actual heir because he has to, you know, he's got the future of the Montgomerys to think of, right? But he doesn't want to do that again because he knows that nobody who he gets introduced to, none of the appropriate women, quote unquote, appropriate women for him to marry, they're all the same kind. They're not the same person inside, but they've all been bred the same way. So they have to behave a certain way and they're going to put on that exact same like, you know, very like innocent, very like coquettish, very like, oh, yes, sir, yes, you know, like submissive kind of behavior. They just will say what they need to say in any situation to make it good and then have their own thoughts and internal ideas. And he won't get privy to those because that's kind of how it worked among the wealthy at that time. It was hard to, rare to marry for love or any kind of idea like that. So he doesn't. And of course, they're throwing really young women at him, like the young ones who haven't been married yet, who are like 17 to 20. And he's like 30 already. And he's like 35.
35 or 37, something like that.
Yeah, because she's like 25.
Yeah, there was a 10-year gap between them, too.
Yeah. So, you know, they're sending even younger women at him. And he's like, I really don't want
this. So he's, can you imagine? He's 20 years younger.
He's been dragging his feet. He's not keen on it. And now he runs up against this super intelligent, feisty woman who looks him in the eyes and talks back at him in a way that nobody of his class would dare do. And he's like bowled over by it. He's like, holy shit. This lady just looked at me and jousted. Like they verbally joust with each other in a way that he's just enamored with and is so unusual for him. That's not the way you talk to like other women talk to him.
Well, yeah. I mean, really, not only as like a man, but also as a duke.
Yeah. Like all the things. Like just like so like all the, and also he's like Adonis level gorgeous, right? He's like Greek sculpture. Of course. So they're having this time like while she's recuperating at his house, and they're definitely like, oh, the tension is growing. It's just it's churning around them, and they can't stop. She has all the awareness of, she knows what men want from her now. She's had that experience, whereas in these, you know, these historical romances, a lot of the women are like, we really uneducated about
that. They're oblivious to it. They can't read like, the signs.
What do you mean, men want women? What? Right. I mean, they know it, but they don't know it, right? There's like even her friend who was like, they might try to kiss you. Like Hattie.
And she's like, done a lot more than kissing there. I know Hattie is like so.
She's so cute.
She is so adorable.
But yeah, I mean, she's not. No one's told her, you know? Nope. She's innocent.
Yep.
And so they have a couple kisses. They steal a couple kisses. There's this, you know, the ball is super hot. She's not wearing any undergarments, which is scandalous. Yes.
She's like, fuck it. I'm not going to put this on underneath.
Well, she doesn't have the right kind of corset. And so she can't wear underwear. It's a whole thing. Anyway, so he's like, there's a couple stolen kisses. There's some like grinding and like rubbing.
And he's like, oh my God, she's not wearing anything underneath this.
He's so into it. And then he, you know, being a duke and being a man, like his natural inclination is like, okay, I want her. How do I make this happen? And he comes to the conclusion, which is not, it's not a bad conclusion. It's just, you know, it's not something she's super excited about, but he's like, I'll just make her my mistress because I can't marry her. She is way underclass for me, but I really want to fuck her, and she wants to fuck me, and so I'm gonna do the right thing. I mean, it's the good thing. I'll buy her a whole house. Who doesn't want a house? Who doesn't want them to be bought a house by a rich man?
I'll take care of her and lock her away.
And then I'll get to come over and fuck her anytime I want because I'll own her.
Anytime I want. Yes.
She'll have to fuck me because I own her. Anyway, so, you know, he makes his proposal and she's all like, no, thank you. I will pass. And he's like, what?
Hold on. Nobody says no.
Nobody says no to me. Are you joking? So then there's a couple other incidents. Like, she ends up in jail from one of the suffrage walks and marches. Because she has to defend Hattie. Because Hattie shouldn't have come. She wasn't supposed to go. Because she's the daughter of a rich banker, Julian
something.
I don't know. Whatever.
Albright. Whatever. I made that up. It's not that.
It doesn't matter. And so she's supposed to stay out of it because if he gets mad about the stuff, like if she gets caught and he finds out that his daughter's hanging around with these suffragettes, I mean, he knows she's doing it, but I don't think he knows exactly what it means yet, right? This is still really, really early days in suffrage movement. Yeah. And they're not even actually asking for the vote yet. They're fighting to appeal the Married Women's Property Act, which there was an act where if a woman has any property, when she gets married, that property becomes her husband's. So they're not even talking about the vote. They're just saying women should be allowed to keep their own property when they go into marriage. That's all right now. That is like step fucking one. Don't take my property and give it to my husband.
It's mine still. Basic, right?
Basic. I mean super like whatever. Anyway, so she shows up at the march anyway, Hattie does. And of course, she starts getting groped by a disgusting police officer who's not a good guy, obviously. And Annabelle is like, no, please don't, you know, sir, we'll follow you. Just don't do that. And he's like, what are you going to do about it? And he's like grabbing Hattie's boob.
Yeah.
And so Annabelle punches him in the nose because she has to. I mean, she has to. That's the only answer.
You do. She did nothing wrong.
So she ends up in jail and they go and tell the Duke. Her friends run off and be like, you got to go get Annabelle. She's in jail. So he storms through the night going to all the jails until he finds her and gets her out and pays for like half the suffrages to get out, I guess, or something like that. Who knows? But then, of course, this is it. This is the moment, right? So she's been rescued because her whole life probably would have fallen apart. Like this was it. She had no solutions here if he hadn't come and saved her. Actually, turns out it still falls apart because everyone finds out she was in jail and she loses everything anyway.
But yeah, Gilbert still then is like, don't come back home.
Well, Gilbert can go fuck himself.
Yeah, Gilbert sucks.
In fact, he should fuck himself more instead of his poor suffering wife.
Five kids, guys.
So he takes her to his house in Belgrave and he's like, here's your room, ask for whatever you want from the housemaid, you know, the housekeeper, take a bath, whatever, you're safe now. And she's like taking the math and she's all like, I'm going to go fuck that man. He saved my life. And now she is not doing it out of, she's not doing it out of like, obligation or thank you. She's doing because she wants to, but she's like, this is it. We've been dancing around this for too long.
It's been a This meet cute's over.
I mean, let's been like a month that they've known each other, but still, whatever. Let's go do this. So she like gets out of her bath, puts on just a small robe and walks down into his room and is just like, hello. Let's do this.
I will kneel before you.
Yeah. And then Yeah. She starts going down on him. And they have a lovely evening. And in the morning, he's like, okay, I'm going to buy you a house and a boat. And she's like, what? And he's like,
hold on.
He's like, but you came to my bed. So now you're my mistress. So now I'm going to make you my mistress. And she's like, no, I just wanted to have sex with you. I'm not your mistress. And he's flummoxed.
He has no idea how to even take that. He's like, wait a minute. The natural progression of this is you're my mistress.
He cannot work this out in his brain, and he is very confused. She's like, no, no, no. I just needed to do this, but now we're done.
I just wanted to fuck.
And I got to go home, and I got to, you know, keep being a student and shit, because I'd have to give all that up. Like, if she became his mistress, she couldn't have friends. They like literally nobody of any quality could associate with her because everyone would know it. Like even no matter how secret you think you can keep things, you can't. People in the society would know because she'd all of a sudden live in a fancy posh area of town.
Right, exactly.
With obviously not a husband. So how is she living like that? Well, she's being kept by somebody. And so people would know. So she would, she'd forfeit all her friends. She couldn't keep studying at Oxford. Oxford won't take the mistress of the Duke. She's only there because she's barely acceptable as is, you know, the other women who are there are ladies and, you know, the daughters of high end, like merchants and stuff. They're like rich people who are going, not just any woman can go to Oxford, you know? So she says, no, she can't do it. She's like, I can't live like that. And also he still like has to get married and have kids. Mm-hmm. And she's like, but what you like, you, what about your wife? And he's like, it'll be fine. She'll understand. That's not acceptable. She's like, I don't want her to understand. I don't want to be that person. Like that sucks. And she's like, and eventually
this point, he won't tell her what has happened.
No. And eventually, like if they did, like if she did get pregnant by him, it would be a bastard child. And that means something, like, you know, and he's like, they live, you know, bastards of dukes live well. Like, I'd still make care for any children. They'd be fine. They just wouldn't be in the line of succession. And she's like, no, but they would eventually be old enough to know they were a bastard and that it was my fault. Like it's that's still not good, you know? She's right. Like, I'm not going to do that to a kid. So anyway, he's just like, I don't get you, lady. I'm trying to buy you a house and a yacht. What more do you want? I'm a duke. How can you say no to these things?
Money and sex.
I have money and I want to fuck you.
Yeah.
And she's like, I like fucking you too, buddy, but I don't want your money. And he's like, that does not compute. So anyway, she leaves and he is just like, fucking
what
crazy
the fuck
ass
happened?
Woman. Her life does start to fall apart. So the college puts her on suspension because they find out she was in prison. And she has to give up her job. She was working for her tutor at the college, and that had really helped her. Like he started giving her a job instead of she having to take on all of like these tutoring positions. So she's helping him get ready for a expedition to the Greece, I guess. I don't know where he's going. The Mediterranean.
I don't remember.
some place where he likes to investigate things and dig up old things. He's like an archaeologist or something. Whatever. We don't really know. It doesn't matter. And so she's been helping him. So she has to like quit doing that. She has to move out of her student lodgings. And she pretty much has to give everything up. And then her tutor's like, hey, you should marry me. And then you can come to the dig and you can be my helper. And you can, because you're smart and you're not even annoying. He's like, most people are either... pleasant or smart, but never both. But you're both pleasant and smart. And that was very nice, actually. I thought that was very, like, because I think he might be right on a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think all smart people are very pleasant.
No, that is very, very true. And assholes. She was beautiful, so that was like, you know, a benefit for him. But
yeah, but it's a very practical marriage proposal. He's like,
it wasn't like there was no malintent behind it, and he wasn't trying to trick her or anything.
No,
he really was trying to help her out. And he's like, hey, and it would benefit me because now you'd be my wife.
Yeah, and he's like, and I don't even like families or kids, so I'm not asking for that.
Exactly.
I just would have a nice person who could come and help me do my research. Yeah. And just kind of pretty. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually kind of a very reasonable proposal. And if she wasn't head over heels in love with the Duke, she should definitely do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if she wasn't in, like, in her situation without the Duke, then it would have been
Without the Duke, 100% you marry this Professor Duke.
Yes.
It's definitely better than going back to Gilbert at any fucking point in time.
And risk the chance of not being chosen or whatever it is by whoever.
Yeah. So then she gets a letter from Gilbert, her cousin, who's basically like, I just heard you were in prison. You can't ever come back here. Fuck off, bitch. So that's fun.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, I can't go home. I can't study. I can't work. Mm-hmm. I have to tell this. She asked for 1 week before she tells the tutor whether she'll marry him or not. Because she wants to give it real thought. She doesn't want to just jump into it. But she also doesn't want to say no right away. So she wants...
Hold on. Was this before or after the Duke proposed to her?
The letter came after, technically. I'm kind of meshing that up. But the proposal came before. Okay. Yeah. So she moves out of her student lodgings and she's hanging out with her... matron? What's...
People?
No.
Or her keeper. Like her...
The fuck is that called? Chaperone. That's it. Chaperone.
Oh.
So, yeah, because they have to have, like, chaperones because they're unmarried women. Yes. So, like, every time she goes to a study session with her professor, this lady has to come with, an older, a widowed lady, because that somehow protects women.
Yes, older.
Yeah. No, nothing crazy has ever happened. And yeah, whatever. Anyway, so she's staying with her. And then the Duke shows up on her doorstep one night and is just like, I've decided I'll just marry you. It's fine. Well, it turns out he fell off his horse. And he landed on his head.
Oh, yeah, he hit his head.
And in that split moment before he hit his head, his whole life flashed before his eyes. And he's just like, I love Annabelle.
Only one face came to mind.
I need to marry Annabelle. So then, in the middle of the night, storms to her house in Oxford. Not even her house, just like the house of the chaperone she was staying at. Yeah. And just decides, I love you and I think I will marry you. And she's like, no. And he's like, I fell off my horse and it all became clear.
And he's like, I hit my head. Now I want to marry you.
And she's just like, are you fucking insane? She's like, no. And he's like, wait, you wouldn't be my mistress and now you won't be my wife? And she's like, yeah, I can't do that. Because she also is a very practical person. And she's like, that would ruin you. And I'm not going to be the person that ruins you. Like, fucking don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
And he's just like,
I don't get it.
I do not get this. I'm a fucking duke. And I wanted to buy you a house and a yacht and make you my mistress. And you said no. And now I've decided, fine, I'll just forget about all of it and I'll marry you. And you still say no. What the fuck, lady?
What the hell?
And she's just like, dude, I think you need to go get a doctor because you fell on your head and something's not right with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And anyway, so he goes home and she's like, that was weird. So she tells all her friends. She finally tells them what happened. Because then she gets kicked out of her chaperone's house because the lady's like, I said no men. So she's sitting there with her friends at Lucy's house and she's just like, well, I have nothing now. I can't go home. I can't study. I can't work. I have to decide whether I can marry the professor or not. I don't want to marry the professor. She pretty much knows she can't marry him because she's just not in love with him. She's very, very much in love with somebody else. But she told him no. And so they're all like... And she didn't come 100% clean, but she basically let them know that she did fuck him. And so she's like, why are you guys even my friends anymore? And they're all like...
After knowing what I did with the Duke. And
they're like, we're all weird ones. Too.
Yes.
Oh, Catriona?
Yes. I love that name, but I can never remember it.
It was much better hearing it. Like when I was reading, every time it came up, I was like, I don't know this name.
I couldn't even imagine how to spell it. Yeah.
I mean, it's Catriona, I think.
Okay.
It looks, it looks like Catriona, but still, it just was like, it's a name that I was just like, what is that name? But then hearing it was much better this time around. Mm-hmm. But let's see. Oh, and then she runs into there's this whole thing with his brother. I can't get into it now. But basically, his brother ran away because he didn't want to go to the Navy. And he's been hiding out for 6 weeks in the college. And she runs into
the cellar,
like,
in the wine cellar or something?
Yeah, in one of the wine cellars. And Catriona was helping him. Yes. But anyway, Annabelle runs into him on campus and she's like, you have to go home. Like, your brother's fucking a mess because he doesn't know where you are. And he's like, my brother doesn't even like me. And she's like, no, he loves you. And he doesn't know where you are. And he's so sad. And I love him. And I told him I wouldn't marry him. And she's like, cries.
Yes, so she confesses.
And Peregrine's just like, oh no, I better go talk to my brother because some shit is going on. So he goes home. The Duke's like drunk. He's never been drunk because their father drowned in a puddle because he was an alcoholic.
Yes.
So he got so drunk, he fell down in a puddle and died.
Drowned. I know. That's an awful way to fucking go.
And like the saddest, like you're...
Embarrassing?
So embarrassed. You're like so fucking powerful and rich and important and you're going to die in a puddle? That's like lame, buddy. Anyway, that's obviously he's got issues. So the Duke's drunk. Montgomery's drunk. Sebastian. He has a lot of names. He's the Duke of Montgomery, but his real name is Sebastian. And he's...
Why does Peregrine have a different last name? Or is that not his last name? Devereaux.
Devereaux is their name. It is also Sebastian's last name.
So it's Sebastian Montgomery Devereaux?
Montgomery is not a name. Montgomery is the seat. He is the Duke of Montgomery. Montgomery is his family seat.
Oh,
so they're very rarely, wherever they're Duke of, is usually not part of their name.
Okay. This is the big part. I was really confused about that whole thing.
Yeah, so.
Because I also don't know history, so I don't understand it.
Well, it's not, it's just this weird thing about the aristocracy, right? Because let's say he had gotten hit on the head and died when he fell off his horse, right? And Peregrine didn't have any sons either. So they are like the Devereaux line, but eventually somebody else will become Duke. It just won't be one of their sons. So they'll go backwards up the line, up the guys until they find like a brother somewhere who maybe had sons, and they'll find a cousin that is still of the same blood and now probably has a different last name.
I see. Who will then become
he becomes the Duke of Montgomery. He's just no longer held by the Devereaux, say.
Okay. Yeah, because he was referred to as Montgomery a lot. Like, she called him Montgomery.
Everybody will call him Montgomery. Like, all of the other peers, the lords, like, they'll say sir, of course, or your grace.
Yes.
But they will call him Montgomery if they refer to him by anything. Because as soon as his father died, he became the Duke of Montgomery, thus Montgomery.
I did not know that's how that went.
See, okay. I read a lot of these. That's the only reason I know. It's because that happens in all of these.
Right. Okay.
They all have to follow.
I thought that was his name, but now that makes sense.
Yes.
Got it. That's his seat.
It's his seat. Okay. It's the seat. It's the dukedom or the earldom or the marquedom, I guess, would be marquis. Anyway, he's drunk. Peregrine walks in and is like, brother, what's going on? And he's all like, I love Miss Archer. And I asked her to marry me and she said no. And Peregrine's just like, what the hell are you talking about? He's like, I fell off my horse and it became clear to me and I told her she should marry me and she didn't want to. I also said she should be my mistress and she didn't want to do that either. And...
Peregrine's like, well, I don't think she would say yes after you hit your head and propose to her.
So he's like trying to give his brother like a pep talk.
I know.
And I don't think he outright comes and tells, but she basically confessed to Peregrine that she was in love with him. Mm-hmm. And so he knows it'll be okay, but he also knows it'll be a big scandal. So he's weighing, do I push my brother into this, which I know will be scandalous for the family, but I think will be really good for him because he's found a woman who won't be that submissive, you know, properly raised wife who will then break under his pressure. Because he's found one who actually, like, can withstand his pressure, like, and is crazy. Or do I, you know, save the family and tell him he needs to forget about Annabelle and move on? So he's a good brother. And he's like, I think you just need to do the right thing, brother. And also, don't tell a woman you fell on your head and then you want to marry her.
I don't think that's going to work.
They don't tend to like that. So he goes to the House of Lords. And he says, I think we should let women have their own property. And I'm no longer Tory. And I'm not running your campaign. Well, he doesn't quit. He just quits the party.
He quits the party.
and he becomes a liberal, and it's wild, and everybody in the house is like, oh my god, this is no, because she's like, he's like a favorite of the queen, and this is going against everything the queen believes in and wants.
Yeah, the queen does not like
and she's like, you can't do that, you ruined yourself. And he's like, okay,
you've lost the castle.
Yep. And he's like, yeah, I did, but I didn't, because really his father lost it in a game of cards. He was just trying to get it back.
Yes, that's right, he was gambling it.
So he's just like, but will you marry me now that I'm no longer as fancy? And she's like, yes, I'll marry you. So
and then they travel everywhere because they become a scandal, and it's just like, oh
yeah. So they do go abroad for their honeymoon, just to kind of let tongues chill out for a while, but he's still a very important duke, so he does have to go back. So they're back in the next book.
Okay,
they're back home. But yeah, they're hanging out on a boat in the Mediterranean, and he's swimming naked in the sea.
Yes, and he's got a semi-chub apparently, and I fucking love that description. She didn't say semi-chub.
She did not say that.
Partial arousal.
Partially
or
aroused.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he comes.
Something a lot more elegant than semi-chub.
I feel like chub was not a vocabulary word back in the 1800s.
Did it use it back then in England?
I feel like I could be proven wrong, but no.
Oh, so good.
So good. And they have a lot of sex, so.
They do have a lot of sex. Yes. And the way that it's described in this story is definitely different than what I've heard in all of the other books that we've read, contemporary and paranormal, mm-hmm. whatever, because it's just so seemingly more proper, you know?
Yeah, but
still so sexy.
It's so sexy. And they still use some of the words.
Mm-hmm.
I think cock gets used, right?
They do use cock. Yeah. Yes, he does say that.
He thinks it, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he thinks it. That is how it's
But described. Yeah, a lot of the rest, like the women's anatomy is much more
they just say
veiled. Like
below or nether regions. Yeah, they don't say those words.
Wetness,
like,
softness.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, inside. Mm-hmm. But not below, like, there's the no act. Yeah, there's not.
They don't say pussy.
No. Or even like slit or anything like that. No.
Mm-mm.
None of that. But still, it's still like for a historic. So this is why I wanted us to read it, because it is a historic romance, but it's a filthy, dirty one. And it has all of the stuff like premarital sex. Like sometimes they make you wait until they get married. This book is all like, these two just get it on.
Let's just fuck it.
Get it on. And it's got like the women's suffrage thing in it, which is really fun because they're real. Like, I mean, not these characters, but there are women like this in history.
Yeah.
Who did exist. And like, it would have been a nice story if Victoria, one of them fell in love with a duke.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know. The history behind the movements and the things. Because even like at the very end, they give a little description about the Oxford College of Women or explanation, not really description, but of like when that all started and stuff. So that was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's still definitely rooted in history. Like, you know, Disraeli did lose to Gladstone as the Tory prime minister to the Liberal prime minister. It was kind of the beginning of the end of like empire, kind of like they were still pushing to expand. They're still an expansionist movement. And this is really late 1800s. So when things start to like slow, and then, you know, we're only a couple decades out from the First World War. And then when women get the vote, and then the Second World War, and then the empire collapses. So this is like the height of expansionist Britain, where they're like fighting in Afghanistan and the Boer War and all over Africa and Asia and just everywhere. And so, and that's like Disraeli's main policy is like continuous expansion will keep the empire, you know, keep the people at home happy. And they're like not happy because their lives aren't that great. Just because you keep going to foreign places and fighting doesn't make us better off at home.
Nope.
So... So it's an interesting turning point politically for the UK because, there's a lot of dissatisfaction and stuff that's happening at home. And, you know, the Tories are just like, but everybody loves empire.
Of course.
Like, no. And then Gladstone does become prime minister, and he's not as progressive as everyone in the movement had hoped. He doesn't give women the right to vote right away. And everyone's like, God damn it. That's what we wanted. Yeah. But anyway. So yeah, it's a fun book for that because it kind of meshes that in with, you know, your standard romance, you know, timelines and romance narratives and stuff.
It wasn't what I was expecting, actually, because I was sort of, like you just said, where, like, they don't really start to have sex until they get married or, you know, it's just a stolen kiss here and there. But they were right on. And I was really, I knew that it was going to be that way just because her story to begin was that she'd already had relations, you know, she was, she'd already been with somebody. So in my mind, I was like, oh yeah, there's gotta be some sex in here before they get married. Cause you obviously also know that they're going to get married. So, you know, the main characters in this. So I enjoyed it, even though the language wasn't what I was, like used to hearing, but that's not to say that I didn't like it. It's just like, just a different take on sex in a
and
different way.
I think like he's one of the more fascinating characters when people write because he's so reserved outwardly, like externally. And so a lot of people in his life have misunderstood. You know, his ex-wife says he has a heart of ice. His brother says he's calm and cold and he never feels anything. So it's like, that's everyone's, people who should love him, who should know him all the way, they still are getting it wrong. Because she immediately, Annabelle's like, oh, he's not cold. Like, of course she thinks that the very couple, like, first meetings, but then even within a few meetings, like by the third meeting or something, he's like, oh, he's not cold, he's just bottled up. Like, well, he's simmering fire inside, he's like he's just keeping it tamped down, right? And if he ever lets go, it'll be like volcanic, she knows. Explosive. Right, so he's not, you know, it's not just the quick perfunctory sex of like some of the upper class that you kind of hear about sometimes, where it's just like you just lay down, he gets on top of you, pump pump pump, and like gets himself off and then goes, you know, he's all about like that very first library scene is him just fingering her.
He pleasures her
to completion, and she's just like, what,
that was amazing. And that was a hot scene.
And then he was gonna fuck her, but then she was like, no, and he's like, yeah you'll be my mistress, and she's like, no.
It's okay, I'll buy you a house and a boat. Oh, that mentality.
So funny.
It is.
So yeah, so I did like that. Because like he's not, okay. So I started these books a while ago. I've read the first two. And I read them again, like last book, where I used my eyeballs and I read the books. And then as soon as I was done, I was like, man, I want to talk about this book on the podcast. So I put it on the podcast and we did the audio for it. And I think this one was good audio too. I liked her. She did well. I really were spoiled because the last book's narration was so fucking good. Look, and the dual narration was just perfect.
Yes. It was the best narration ever.
So, it's, you know, she did a good job, but she's, you know, we didn't get any real sexy deep man voice.
We didn't. No.
Too bad.
We didn't. And we're just going to have to deal with it. But she did. You knew the differences between the characters and she did her accents really well and differentiated. She didn't have the deep man voice, but it's hard for
sure. Of course it is. But he still sounded manly and sexy. He was fine.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I enjoyed it. And I just think, God, it was such a good, we're going to have to read a more traditional historical fiction so you can get a different, or historical romance. Because yeah, I thought this one was really different and I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And then I've read the second one and I just, that one's even steamier. So hot.
I did not think that Lucy was going to get a book. So that sounds exciting.
Not only a book, but she gets the second book.
Yeah, right away. I thought it was going to be Catriona or
Hattie,
for sure.
Yep.
Or at least Catriona, because obviously something is going on with Peregrine. But Peregrine's young. He's like 19. So maybe it's not gonna be between
I don't
them
think
two?
It's Peregrine for Catriona. I don't want to ruin anything, but I don't think it is.
No, that's all right. It doesn't ruin anything. But I'm interested to see what type of sexual antics Lucy and what's the guy's name again? Valentine
with a B. Tristan
Valentine. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, you read it so you can hear the B.
Yeah,
okay.
I read it. Yeah,
or you can see
I could see the B. Oh yeah, like you, it hurt. It's surprising. Like, yeah, you're kind of like, okay, she's, you know, She's the firebrand of the cause. So
she's the one who's leading all of this and housing the girl. Like, well, not all the girls. She's housing Annabelle now. But I'm interested to see that. But the sex in this one was decent too. Like, it was still really steamy and still.
Oh yeah. Fun. Oh god, no. The tension, the sexual tension between these two is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, it is.
Just all of the just. You know, like the time they spend together, like being
the closeness and the kisses here and the touches there, and like you know, being pulled into an alcove and like making out in the maze and just like being finger banged in the open, not in the open. Like, it's just it's super super sexy, and they have conversation, like not while they're having sex, so we don't get that. But Annabelle's not afraid to say, "Hey, don't fucking get me pregnant, asshole."
Yeah,
and he's like, "Oh, okay."
I mean, you know? Yeah, because she'd had her past is already pretty traumatic because of that. You know, she didn't know much about it when she started her liaison with William, and she ended up pregnant. And that, you know, back then,
back then ruined him.
Yep, that was it. And she was unmarried and pregnant. That was not good.
And then to boot, she lost the baby after that, which did hurt her after that. You know, like,
oh, sure.
She's already screwed, but then she became attached to the idea of it, and then it just ruined her much more when she lost it.
Yeah, I mean, if she hadn't lost it and had given birth, she would never have even been able to go to Oxford, though. So her life That's would true. Have been very, very different. Mm-hmm. But so she knows the actual perils of life with men, of giving yourself to a man. And so, yeah, when she goes to his bed the first time and she's, you know, finally ready to do it, and she's like, "I want this. I want you, Sebastian." And he's like super excited about it. She's like, "But please don't get me pregnant." And he's like, "Okay." So then he pulls out and
he does the pull out method, which I don't think we've had before.
No, because ours generally are like, "Don't worry, we can't get pregnant because we're fae or whatever.
We're pregnant."
And then they have twins by the end of the book.
Yes, they do.
And I'm like, "Well, that proved wrong."
Unless you're my mate, then I can get pregnant. Right.
Or like, you know, yeah, we only, like, we're dragons and we only mate once a firestorm.
Right.
Exactly. Like, that's the only time you're going to get pregnant. Or, you know, like, yeah, so we have a whole bunch of reasons why they could just come all over the place inside of you without it ever mattering. Because they're also all immune to diseases, so.
Yes, of course. They don't have any disease.
But in this book, that's like, no. And, of course, condoms don't exist yet.
And she asks for it. Exactly. Which is, I think, really big. But
actually, they do.
That's the kind of character she is.
Sorry. What? I think they do.
Condoms?
Because I think they're in book two.
Oh. What is it made out of?
I think it's sheep bladder or something like that.
Okay. That's what I was going to... Because I knew I'd heard that, too, historically.
Yeah, because the first... Oh, no, there were rubber ones by the 1860s.
Oh, okay.
But skin condoms were more popular because they were cheaper, and the rubber ones tended to fall off. And then in 1920, they became latex. But condoms existed back.
I imagine they were, like, so thick, too. Right. Like, there's just no sensation for him at all, which, whatever. Yeah. Oh, I don't care.
That's funny.
But anyway, I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. Huh.
But anyway, so she does. She straight up says, "Hey, I can't do that. Let's not do that." And so he's like, "Cool, I'll pull out." There was one time she was just like, "I'm sad that he can't stand me, but we can't do that kind of stuff. Like, I'm not ready for it. We're not there in our relationship," where she'd never intended to marry him or anything. But for a Kiss and Tell this episode, we thought we'd share stories about pull out.
Yes.
Pull out methods. Fun, interesting stories about our own experiences with the pull out method.
Well,
which is not foolproof, guys.
No, like, I think first of all, we should say that.
Yes.
Traditionally, actually, I'll look it up real fast, but it doesn't have the hugest success rate. But
no, it's a good thought.
It works about 78% of the time overall.
There's still chance of babies.
Yep. But even knowing that and being a full, you know, adult, smart ass woman, it's still what I use a lot of the time.
Still.
And it's not great. I know that.
So can I ask you this?
Sure.
Do you, though, sort of time, like understand mm-hmm. where you are with ovulation yep. and menstrual cycles and yep. stuff. So you have that at least timed and, you know, understanding.
Sure. So I track my cycle by, I take my basal temp, which is the first thing you do in the morning, temp yourself every day. And so I have a little chart, you know, I have an app. Mm-hmm. Natural Cycles. I really like it. It's a great app if anyone is looking for it. And not even just for contraception. Like, you can use it either if you're trying to conceive or if you're trying to prevent pregnancy. So it has two methods. So it'll tell you, like, try to get pregnant now. Whereas it tells me, like, don't fuck around now.
Don't fuck around and find out right now.
So I do that. And then I also, like, during a specific window, I test my LH, which mm-hmm. is luteinizing hormone, which happens right when you have a wave of it right before you release your egg. So through those methods, I know the, like, 5-7 days that are really dangerous. And yes. I tend to be like, no sex now or condom, right? But yeah. then the rest of the time, I'm like, I don't give a fuck that much, you know? And this is dumb, and I know it's dumb, but it is something that we should talk about. And I think maybe talking about it more will help change the narrative. And hopefully, mm-hmm. I think younger men are better about it, because the couple times I've slept with someone younger, it's not a fight. Condoms are easier for them to use. But men around mm-hmm. our age, honest to God, treat condoms like it's the fucking worst thing that's ever happened to them. Really? It's like fighting a fucking toddler to put shoes on.
Shoes on?
Before going outside. Or like a coat. You're just like, oh, toddler, why are you trying to run around naked? And they're like, ah. That's what it is. It really is. Because, like, you can talk to, and you can, and they'll be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they'll put one on, and then they have some excuse for, like, oh. And like, there comes a point. Like, I'm just like, fine. I fucking give up. Just fine.
So then do you ask them to pull out?
Yes. I'm just like, you know, you can't come inside, right? And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. I gotcha. And I'm like, okay. Oh my God. But I also am taking the other, like, I am monitoring on my own. And, yes. you know, I have no intention of becoming pregnant. But if the worst should happen, I luckily live in a state where I can still have access to shit I need. You know, so
that is an option.
But it's not here. My plan, guys. I'm not trying. I'm right. pretty it's, good about avoiding it. So
you're not so blasé no. about it that you're like, eh, I can fix that.
No. Yeah. I don't, like, that's not my end solution.
No. Not at all. That's why I asked, because I knew that you're... You track your cycles and you do that. So you are responsible about it, because men our age, even from, like, the very beginning when they were teenagers to now, that was, like, our generation. Teenage pregnancy was a huge thing back mm-hmm. then, you know? The newer generations now, that's not a...
I mean, I don't have a huge sample, but I'm just saying the few guys younger than me, so the few guys, like, at their late 20s that I've slept mm-hmm. with, just condoms were just their thing. And I was yeah. like, oh, you're so much cooler than 40-year-olds. Right. So the fuck is wrong cooler. With 40-year-olds?
It's just our generation. It's what, you know.
And they all already have kids, so it's like they literally don't care. And I'm like, you already have children. Like,
you could still have children.
You should care more.
You should care, and absolutely.
They're like, but it's just, it doesn't feel as good. And I'm like, oh, fuck you. You are a brat.
I don't want to put my shoes on.
So, I mean, that's not a great excuse, I know. But I'm not a perfect role model is basically what we're saying, is don't follow my behavior. It's not a good one. But it does mean I am familiar with the pull-out method quite a bit.
Yes. So, which means that's one that you use a lot. And I would have to say I'm probably not a great example either, because I think it would have been smart to use the pull-out method, but I never even did. Like, I was just like, yeah, if it happens, it happens. And it never happened, but in fact, I needed extra help to make it happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, but you couldn't have known that young, but.
No, I couldn't have known it then. But I have done it, obviously. I have done it with past partners. I've done it with Dan a few times when we first started dating. I honestly think we only use condoms probably, I know, the very first time and maybe the first couple of times. And after that, we didn't. And we didn't even use the pull out. Like, it just, whatever. And occasionally it was like, oh, we should be a little bit more responsible. How about you pull out? And so he would. even after like months of not, I don't know. And then we would like buy condoms again and like.
I do love that. I love the inconsistency. They're like, oh, this month we're going to try not to be reckless.
Stupid.
We were reckless last month. We'll be reckless next month. But this month,
yeah,
this is the month we're going to be responsible. Is,
yeah. You never know if it's not going to work.
I kind of like the pull-out method for another reason. Mess.
Oh.
It is messier on me when they, right? But I don't have dripping stuff falling out of me for the next however fucking
Look.
Long.
The drippings are a problem.
I fucking hate that feeling.
I'm not a... I hate feeling like a fucking turkey after after being basted. I feel like it's not fun.
It's not
fun.
It's awkward.
It's sticky and it's messy. Especially, I don't know if you experience this now, but I don't know if this is like because after I had kids or whatever, but if I laugh or if I cough, it's like, oh, oops.
No, yeah. Oh, we're 40 now. So even though I haven't had kids, yeah, the muscles are.
It's just a thing.
You know, they're older,
they're
right?
They're looser. Yeah. They're older. Yeah.
You sneeze and pee. Got it.
Yes. That's
that's how it happens now.
Incontinence.
You're just like, fuck, yes. Did I just, well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes.
But no, so you like, you go and you think you get it all out. You like sit on the toilet and you're like, okay, I think I'm not dripping anymore.
You've wiped.
And then you like lay on your other side and like another like pocket of it fell out and you're just like, fuck.
And it's not even just like this drip. It's just like this gloop, right?
And it just is, you can just feel it. And now it's in your underwear. It's on you. It's touching you. And you're like, this fucking sucks.
You're sitting in it. You're laying in it.
So, on the other hand, when I make them pull out and they come like on my belly or my back, mm-hmm. they then get up and go get a towel. And then they wipe me down.
Yes.
And the mess is gone. And now I have a gross towel, but I wash it.
Whatever, clean up your own mess. You make the mess, you fucking clean it.
Yes, that's the rule. And then I'm not dripping for the next like 30 minutes.
Exactly.
I'm like, ooh, this has its merits.
Yes, it totally
It's a
still
much
works.
Faster cleanup method. Because otherwise, they don't give a fuck that you're laying there going, this is stupid and your cum is dripping out of my body.
No, they got off.
And they go to sleep and they're like, nah. And I'm like,
And then you leave the bed.
Sticky.
Yeah, for sure. It's always nice to have something around. But afterwards, you get up, you use the bathroom, you wipe yourself clean. Yeah, because it's not even just like within the next couple of hours. Sometimes you wake up in the morning and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
Shit's still there.
You're like, where the fuck did you come from?
You've just been staying dormant in there?
Well,
just hanging
they're
out.
They're very determined sperm. They're trying their damnedest.
They're fertilizing each other. They're fertilizing the things around them. They're just.
They're like,
know,
we have very
trying.
Important DNA we have to get somewhere.
We just don't know where to go.
We're not sure where that is, but we're going to get there. And I'm like, not on my watch, motherfuckers.
Sorry. No thanks.
Stay away. So, yeah.
Yeah. So they experienced that the first time and probably a few other times, but it's only explained that first time.
Yeah, I assume they still are cautious for the rest of for a while because she's still in school and he supports her still being in school and going to going to Oxford and stuff.
Yeah.
And so I don't think he's in a rush. He will. I mean, he does want heirs, obviously, eventually.
He needs heirs, yeah.
And I guess so. In that world, they're older, so they probably should have babies quickly. What?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to ask, does their marriage count? Does she become a duchess?
Yes.
Okay.
She is a duchess.
Because he officially divorced first wife. Okay. I just wasn't sure how that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It all counts. It just isn't, like he said, he couldn't marry her in a church because the church can't sanction his next marriage because he's divorced. But in the eyes of the law, she's his wife because he did it right, you know. And she is the duchess. People do have to say your grace to her, which is super fun because they are all like, but she was a commoner.
Right.
Right. So there's some shit in the next book where people are like not very nice and you're just like, fuck you, old lady.
Yeah.
But he's still very important, so they have to, like, they can't ostracize her too much because he still has
authority.
Yeah, they still want him to, like, be on their side. So, and any heirs will be his heirs and will have the title of Duke after him if they're male, not if they're female, because fuck that. Women don't get...
Right. Look, that's going too far with women's rights, okay? We stop it right there.
I mean...
Well, actually, we stop it way before then, but still...
What, do you think we're all equal or some shit?
Which sort of brings us to our not so fun fuck
fact. Not the funnest of fun fuck facts, but it is a fact. It's an article. It's humanrightscareers.com. It's not written by anybody in particular because it's just... Oh, no, there it is. Emmeline Sokin Huberty. And it's called Types of Feminism, The Four Waves. It's just a really quick primer about the four waves of feminism, starting with the first wave, which is what we would be talking about for in this book. It is the appearance, you know, of feminist ideas around starting in the late 1700s into the 1800s, when Mary Wollstonecraft published The Vindication of the Rights of Women in 1792. And then, you know, some women got together and really came up with, like, specific rights that they were asking for, like the right to vote. And it was really simple, like fairly low, like not low stakes, high stakes, but simple goal of making society recognize that women are humans and not property. So that's the very beginning. That's just where people started. You got to start with women are humans. Now, in the first wave, it is mostly white women because it is focusing on, you know, of that at that period, only white people were people anyway, were humans. So we're just trying to get white women to be humans. Okay. Then the second wave is in the 60s and 70s, and it's built, kind of inspired by and built on the backs of the civil rights movement and looking at, like, oppression in the family. So it's the Equal Pay Act, Roe v. Wade, you know, kind of taking back some bodily autonomy that was missing, but still highly white, right? Third wave feminism is when more it became a little bit more inclusive, a little bit more intersectionality with race and identity politics and, like, ideas. So bringing along women of color and, like, trying to speak up for women's rights, women of color's rights, trans women, all kinds of women, not just white women. So realizing that as far as the past feminisms had gotten, they really still didn't bring everybody along equally. And so white women are still paid better. You know, like, when you do the, like, look at the pay scales and find out, like, you know, women are, like, only earn 78% for every dollar. 76 cents for every dollar men win.
Yeah.
But if you look at Hispanic women and Black women, it's even lower. So third wave is kind of finally getting some of that intersectionality to it and learning to be broader in our umbrella of women. And then there's a debate about whether we're still in third wave or whether we're in fourth wave now. We're kind of feels like a different wave because of the attack on women's rights, how we're actually losing.
Going backwards?
Some rights. And, and a lot of, like, the critiques about past feminism and white feminism in particular, how the past movements weren't inclusive. So that's kind of just a quick, very small article about some of the beginnings and middles of feminism and kind of where we're at, but not by any means an in-depth dive. There's a lot of ideas in it that are, you can click on for more expansion, like, and to read other articles or to define topics and stuff. So we wanted to bring a little bit of information, but we didn't want to, like, give anyone a fucking, you know, human, like, dissertation,
history,
doctoral thesis about feminism.
Right.
So that's why we'll share that on our social media this week.
Yeah, good. Just fitting for the story that we just dove into.
Yeah.
All right. So let's rate this thing. What do you think?
I really like this book. I mean, I immediately wanted us to read it for the podcast.
Yeah.
So I feel pretty strongly about that. I think it's a 9. Like, I really just, I loved the characters, even though, like, you know, Sebastian is not my kind of guy. Like, I don't want to be married to someone that reserved and uptight. But I do love, obviously, I don't want to live in any other time than my current time. I don't want to go live in the past. Sure. I don't want to fight for those kind of rights. I don't want to be on that kind of precipice. I have my own house and my own dog, and I just live my life. It's super nice, right? But there is something appealing to, and I feel that when I read books like this, especially, you know, of this era, and I feel that for like Annabelle too, where having someone come and just take the burdens mm-hmm. is so appealing. Like
really
finding
is.
Someone like she is struggling. She is mm-hmm. doing it herself and she's doing great at it, but it is a fucking slog. And it's that much harder because of like her station and her life and her
and
that she is a woman yes. and that all of these things. And she's an unmarried woman, so she has to do everything right. And just ending up at his house sick because she hasn't been sick since she was a kid. Mostly because she never let herself be sick. Not because right. she avoided illnesses.
She didn't wear a mask, guys.
Yeah. She just did not allow it to happen because she couldn't. She couldn't afford it. She couldn't afford right. the time or the energy. And there was no one to take care of her after. Like, she lost yep. her mom pretty young. And then by 17, had to tell her dad she was pregnant. And so she lost him essentially uh-huh. too. And so to find Sebastian and him just be that person who can just take the burden and be like, mm-hmm. I can carry this. Now, he needs help too. He's carrying a heavy, heavy fucking load of being this Duke. And he became Duke at a very young age because his dad died in a puddle. So he has issues and he needs help and he needs support and he needs his brother to step his shit up. And he needs...
Yeah.
And he does need a wife and, you know, to kind of help with it. And he also needs to realize that not all of the burdens are his to bear. Like, letting go of the idea of getting back the castle, the family seat that his father yeah. lost in the gambling. He got back, like, 5 other properties his father lost. That's enough. It's okay.
Look.
You did fine.
You'll be fine. You're gonna be
fine. You're gonna be good, kid. But I think, so, as much as I don't want to end up, I wouldn't want to be with a Sebastian.
Sure.
I do just love that idea of someone coming along and just taking on the burdens and giving you a break.
It is giving you a break. It's that support. And I think that can be misconstrued with, like, women giving up their power or whatever, or, like, their pride. And it's not. It's a partnership. She is also taking care of him
yeah.
in ways. So it's not just now he gets to take care of her in every single facet that she needs. She also reciprocates. So it's a partnership there. So I'm going to give this an 8. And I think it's so funny because you were saying that Sebastian is not the man that you want. And I agree. I don't want that. But that's also why I'm giving it an 8, because I think I'm not as attracted to him as a character, but he's really good for her.
Yes. He's perfect for her.
Perfect
He's for exactly her. The foil she needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, I'm not that attractive. Like, even the way he's described isn't that attractive to me. Like, the super fine blonde hair, like, almost white, and like...
He was not blonde for me. I know they kept saying it, but he was not. He had black hair for me. Or like dark yeah, brown hair.
Yeah. If I'm attracted to him, they have dark hair. But yeah. This guy has, yeah, so he's like blonde and then just like super sculpted, chiseled mm-hmm. like muscles, but just thin, like, and sculpted muscle. No, thank you. Anyway. No, he's not my character, but I just love the way I do think it's really well done, the way he wrestles with that, like, not being understood and then finding someone who understands him and is like, you're not cold, you're fiery hot, but I also yeah. still am not going to be your mistress, and just being like fucking confounded by this new reality in which he can't have everything he wants.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And accepting that, like, he accepted that challenge and he invited it and it, like, welcome, you know, like, it didn't make him mad to where he was like, that's not the type of woman I want. I need somebody way more submissive. This was exactly what he needed in his life, and he accepted it mm-hmm. instead of being a stubborn brat about it.
Oh, yeah, because he knew.
Which he could have easily been.
He did not want what they wanted him to marry, and that's why he was dragging his feet by it. Like, he's been a while since he's been married, and, like, he should have gotten remarried by now. And he's just like, nah. He's not even going to parties. He's not hanging out at, like, events where he would meet women. He's just like, nah, I'm not interested.
Who was Caroline?
So Caroline is a widowed woman of, I think she's a countess, who's on the property next to his. And they have a sexual relationship because he does like sex. He just knows he's not going to get married. So he doesn't want, like, he's not going to take a mistress. He really, you know. Isn't until he meets Annabelle, but he's not going to use prostitutes. He's not going to use He's not going to misuse his staff the way some rich guys do.
Sure.
He's not going to sleep with a lower man's wife, like cuckold a, you know, man whose rank is lower than his. So that would leave other duke's wives. And he just, like, he got cuckolded. Like, wife left him for somebody. He's not going to sleep with somebody's wife. He's just, he is principled and moral. So luckily, lady who is widowed lives next door.
Okay. I was wondering about that too. I was just like, wait a minute, does that make her his mistress? So then, okay, that was a little confusing.
In our vernacular, no, even then, no, right?
Because that was her property.
No, she owns all of her own shit. So she's
that's
just
her
his
own stuff.
I think they would just be friends with benefits in our world.
Okay, fuck
they're
buddies.
Fuck buddies in our world. And back then, they don't. I don't know that they have a term for it. They just have an arrangement. Where they can sleep
they
with
have
each other, and it's cool.
But she wasn't like frowned upon by society.
Well, they kept it quiet enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she already owns all her shit. So once you are married, once you're a married woman, like if you end up widowed, you have so much more freedom. Like you can, and especially if you're widowed young and you're still like young and pretty, but they don't make you go around with a chaperone anymore because you've been married.
Oh.
So you just get to live your the best way, like literally the best life would be
a
young widow in this society. A rich young widow, like a widow of a duke some kind of viscount or something.
Someone who had left.
But they would have had to be able to leave you good property. They can't always. Sure. A lot of times the property's entailed away. And if there was no heir, so if like, I'm going to just assume it's not in the book anywhere. But my assumption is that Caroline had a son by her husband. And so she's raising that son who will take that place. Let's just assume that, right?
If there are
no children and it's a titled land, it will go to like a cousin or a brother or...
So he was like an only child or didn't have cousins or an uncle or something.
I mean, they'd find somebody else, and then she'd be the dowager countess, so she'd have to live in a dowager like then it could get tricky. It might not be a good
got it
life.
Okay,
but if he was able to leave you enough personal money outside of the estate, you could go buy a house and live a very nice life as a widowed lady with money, with your own. And
all
then
right.
Because this is why they're trying to change the property, she has no incentive to remarry, because if she remarries she loses her property. It becomes her husband's and she can't run her life anymore. She has to be beholden to her husband. So that's why these ladies want to change that law and go, well, let's say Caroline did want to get remarried and keep her property. She should be allowed to do that.
Okay, got it.
So
I knew, because obviously I knew they were sleeping together and stuff, but then I was just like, but is she then considered the mistress too? Or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think they use the term. I think it mostly implies a financial responsibility and often happens during a marriage. Like it's the women kept on the side during a marriage financially. As well, obviously there's sex involved, but it's more about they are put into like apartment or a house or some place and paid for by the man, by the husband. So I don't think they would have called her a mistress so much as just a loose woman of questionable morals, but she's been married, so it's okay.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Oh, that's so interesting. Well, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good book. And we'll read book two at some point because it's super sexy. And I want you to meet the real, like, Valentine.
That's so funny because I jokingly call it Valentine's Day. And now there's an actual Valentine out there. Awesome. Okay, guys, so for our next book, we are going to be reading Raising L by S.E. Reichert. We've read S.E.'s books before. We even had her on the show a while ago. So this one is a cowboy.
Yeah.
Cowgirl. I think they're based in Wyoming in this one. So, this is an eyeball book.
Eyeballs.
Gotta eyeball it.
Put our eyeballs on it. Mm-hmm. And so that'll come out next episode. In the meantime, if you want to reach out, you can find us on social media at Instagram and Facebook. We are Dirty Books, or you can email us directly at dirtybooks@gmail.com. And in all those places, it is with three H's.
And you can visit our website at dirtybooks.com. And most places you can find podcasts. If you guys can go there, rate, review, subscribe, that'd be amazing. Thank you, Jim Townsend, for the music. And with that, we'll say goodnight. This is Selah.
And this is Kalina.
And we'll see you later.
Bye. Yeah, you've been listening to Reading Dirty Books with Kalina and Selah. Be sure to tune into the next episode. some more of your dirty books read to you. And if you're listening on a format that allows you to give a rating, please do that for them.